You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 140.
Welcome indeed to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We are very excited to bring you the show this week. This show is all about building things.
But before we talk too much about building things, this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by Breaking Games.
So Breaking Games has a couple of really great games out right now. Two of them that we're talking about a lot are Order of Invention and The Stars Align. You might say, actually, that The Stars Align is a little bit of a building game. You're kind of building constellations.
You're setting constellations down, but you're doing it to build lines in your color.
Okay, sure. I'll take that.
Yeah.
The Stars Align is a great two-player game. You and I have a lot of fun playing that.
Yeah,
it's a nice, casual, relaxing game that we can sit down and play right after we put the kids to bed. Like, maybe if it's a long day and we're just not ready to get something bigger out, The Stars Align is a great option for us.
Yeah, it's a nice, light little game.
Yeah, and if we have more people over, that's when Order of Invention comes out.
Yeah, that one's just a fantastic way to spend 15 minutes with your friends, guaranteeing that you will get things wrong.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you especially, but...
Oh,
but also,
wow. Wow. Really? Thanks.
But
that's
also,
very kind.
You know, the general...
Right. That's why we play with our oldest Claire sometimes, because that way...
You can feel better about yourself?
Not so much that, but I know somebody else will get something wrong, too.
I get things wrong. Occasionally.
Sometimes. But anyway, that's Order of Invention and The Stars Align from Breaking Games. Thanks so much to Breaking Games for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. So, building things. This podcast is all about building things, and there's a reason why.
Is that reason because we just got Tiny Towns in the mail?
We did just get Tiny Towns from AEG. We had Peter McPherson, who is the creator of Tiny Towns, on the show a couple of months ago, I think. Mm-hmm. And we talked about where the game came from. I have been talking about this game a lot.
Ad nauseum to anyone who will listen.
I fell in love with this game at PAX Unplugged, and we finally got it in the mail. And that day... I was like, we're ripping this thing open and we are playing this game. So we did an unboxing video. You can check that out on facebook.com/familygamersaa.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and I played a couple games of that. So why don't we just jump right into what we've been playing?
Sure. Let's do that. We've been playing Tiny Towns.
Mm-hmm. So here's...
It is everything that you promised it would be.
So I did not oversell the game.
No. Surprisingly, you did not oversell the game.
it's a shock. He's actually accurate.
It's really good and really fun, although I can definitely see, so far I've only played it two players, which you have to be very aware of what the other person is trying to do.
Yep.
I can imagine that it feels very different at three or four or five players, because it's more about getting a general feel and being flexible with your building.
Right, right. So Tiny Town supports up to six players. It can either be solo mode all the way up to six, and so...
Yeah.
I think when I played it at Unplugged, I think there were probably six people playing because they were just trying to cram as many people as possible in. And it was really hard to, especially since I only played it the one time, to really get some strategy and stuff like that. But, you know, we played two games.
Mm-hmm.
And
with
the second game. Yep. And the second game we added in the monuments.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was cool.
I got a monument that synergized really well with one of the buildings. And
yeah.
I use those two to drive you batty.
To make my life difficult.
It was a ton of fun. So you
it was
won,
fun, though.
But you won the first game. I won the second game.
That's true.
And we really look forward to playing this. Do you think that our 10-year-old or our 8-year-old will have any trouble playing this game?
Oh, no. I think they'll be fine with it.
Right.
Although I think, especially for our 8-year-old, we will want to lean towards that sort of recommended beginning set of buildings.
Right. I think that's smart to do at least once. And so it'll be good for him, and I think he'll pick it up pretty quickly.
I think you're probably right.
AEG is also doing some really cool promotional stuff with this that we're hoping to be involved in. So stay tuned to see what we're able to do with Tiny Towns.
But in the meantime, let's talk about a few other games that we've been playing.
Mm-hmm.
We went to a friend's house and I brought Fire in the Library.
Yeah, so a couple times ago when we went over there, they had said, oh, this game is something that I actually kind of want to play. And so,
and my ears perked right up and I was like, okay, yep. I will make that happen. Mm-hmm. I definitely enjoy Fire in the Library at every player count that I've played so far. But I definitely think it's more fun and more chaotic at the higher player counts.
I will say,
four or five players.
I remember, and we talked about this on the show, the last time I played Fire in the Library, I think there were three people playing. And this was, it's a press your luck game. And I found it really frustrating in the beginning because press your luck games, like, you don't get the opportunity to strategize a lot of the time. And that's right. Frustrating. And this is a game where I had fallen, just by dumb luck, I had fallen way behind at the beginning. And then by dumb luck, I got way ahead at the end and I ended mm-hmm. up winning the game. Mm-hmm. Consequently, feeling like a moron because I'm fine after I've lost a game, but while I'm losing, I'm not great. I've been trying to be better about that. I really have. It's a growth opportunity.
It sure is.
But for some reason, I don't know if it's because like we just had a really great, you know, time hanging out with some friends or what. I had a much better time playing Fire in the Library this time around, even though I was the one who burned down the library.
Yeah. Well, I think it's notable that you really need to come into this game with the knowledge that this is a press your luck game where your odds get progressively worse.
Right.
The rewards get higher, but the odds get worse as the game goes right. on.
It's almost like the opposite of Quacks.
Yeah, pretty much exactly the opposite.
Right, which is why I like Quacks so much. I like the game a lot.
But I think if you come in with that mindset of like, this is like kind of bad, and then it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Sure.
If you know to expect that, it's a lot easier to swallow.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah, I had a hard time with the gadgets or whatever they're called because they were so far away they were hard to read. But whatever.
Sorry.
It's all good. It's all good.
How about some other stuff?
Earlier that day, I got another chance to play Discoveries.
Still just as good?
It's still good. It wasn't even our copy. We have a copy of the game. We've never played our copy. It's a great game. I love it a lot. You haven't played it at all yet, right? Or you got to go one chance to play it?
I played it with you and Asher and our friend Dave. All right, well, how about some other stuff? You got me to finally play Shadows in Kyoto.
I did. I really like that game. It's this kind of Stratego-like game with a couple of added elements to it with the Japanese theme.
You got some hidden information.
Yeah.
The idea is you're moving these spies around the board, mm-hmm. and two of the spies have real intelligence, and all the rest are fake,
right.
like, counterintelligence types.
Right. And so you can't blitz and try to just take over all the spies, because if you get too much fake intelligence, you lose.
Right.
Which I like.
Yeah, that's how I ended up losing, actually.
Awesome.
So It was a good time.
Now, did you get a chance to play with all the extra special
abilities?
We
did not play with any of the extra stuff because it was me and Asher, and it was our first time playing. So.
Okay, sure. So that was Shadows in Kyoto from Deepwater Games, right?
Mm-hmm. Expect to hear more about that soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that game a lot. It's beautiful, too. Like, Deepwater does an amazing job. All their Emperor S3 developed stuff. The art is just this mm-hmm. wonderful mm-hmm. Japanese style art. It's really, really nice. We just published a review for Hanamakoji relatively recently. Yeah. Good stuff.
Speaking of hidden information, I also played a one-on-one game of Pyramid of Penguin with Elliot, which is always slightly frustrating.
The four-year-old.
But no, it was good. And as a two-player game, obviously the mechanics are a little bit different because your penguin player still controls two penguins so that it's not just one guy moving around on the board and you can just lock down on where he is. I played as the mummy this time, and it's very interesting that as the mummy, you get very little information as to where everybody else is going.
Okay.
But you get the occasional little flash of insight. So when any penguin manages to land on one of the treasures they're looking for, they get all happy that they got it. And then they have to show you and everybody else the card that they have for the treasure that they just got.
Okay.
So that's your moments as the mummy where you're like, I know exactly where that person is, and hopefully I can get to that area in the next turn or two.
Right.
And figure it out so I can capture them.
Sure. That makes sense.
So it was neat. It definitely feels different at two players than it does at more.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to play that, but I do want to. So.
It seems like the kind of game that would be fun even with a group of adults, even though it's kind of a kid theme.
Sure.
What's something else you've been playing?
You know, that's the last games on my list. Everything else on my list is stuff I've played with you. So,
okay. Well, what's something we've been playing?
We played a whole bunch of Debloccle.
A whole bunch of DeBlanco.
One night, yeah. Where I think you just beat me every time, and then...
Yes.
And then you were like, all right, this isn't even fun anymore. So we stopped playing. So, I don't know. I was not in my element that night, I guess.
I do like that as a just super quick... I'm not going to say light, but a super quick to pick up and
I mean,
down
it's pretty light.
Game. It is, but it always makes me feel like my brain's getting a workout.
Yeah, yeah, but that doesn't mean that it's a heavy game.
Sure.
It's just a strategy. It
makes you think.
Yep, which I like a lot. But the night before that, we got together with some friends, and we played a game that, I have to be honest with you, like, I didn't know how this was going to go.
Yeah, our expectations were mixed at best.
Right. So we played a game called Wisdom of Solomon from Fun Hill Games. And the reason why I wasn't sure how I felt about this was because the art wasn't, you know, the stuff that is really popular these days, which just absolutely immediately grabs you and sucks you in, like Days of Wonder, you know, Druid City Games, like this art is amazing. Like it was serviceable art.
It was classic Euro art.
Yeah, it kind of was.
Everything was cubes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't bit care. Of pictures here and
I
there.
I didn't care about the cube thing, but like it was the art was very utilitarian.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't sure how I felt about that. I just didn't know. And the game is a game based on Israel during biblical times.
Specifically Israel during the reign of King Solomon.
Right. Well, that makes sense. And I don't know what the backing of the game is in the sense of, like, I don't know what the motivation was for creating this game. So, you know, if this is a theological group that's looking to make a game that has a certain theme to it so that it could appeal to church groups and these kinds of things, then it's less likely that that game is going to be good than a board game designer, established designer,
yeah,
who wants to make a game with that theme.
Right.
And I just didn't know. I had no idea. I don't really have a lot of information about the folks who designed the game and these kinds of, and that's probably more my ignorance than anything else. So we're like, okay, well, we read through the rules. We're like, okay, so there's kind of this area control thing, resource management going on.
It was mostly a worker placement.
Yeah. It was worker placement, but then on top of that, there was resource management and area control.
Area control, yeah.
And so we got together with some of our friends and we played.
And we all enjoyed it.
It was pretty good.
It was a little tough to get into. There were a lot of moving pieces at first.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got into playing the game, we were all kind of rolling along and being like, yeah, I get this.
Yeah, I was strong early and then I just kind of went at the end.
Yeah, well, I was the player who...
activated the network.
I mean... Sort of, but mostly I was the player who early on was just kind of dabbling and being like, what happens if I do this? What happens if I do this? And then by the third round or so, I realized that I was already shut out from doing any one specific strategy. So I just went straight for like, well, let me do this thing that gets me some stuff and some points and might block some other people. Sure. And I just kind of did those two things over and over again.
Right.
And then seized other opportunities when I saw them.
It was actually really interesting because I would say for probably the first third to half of the game, we were going around doing things on the board and nobody was building Solomon's Temple. And
which
the way
the
game works is the game ends either if Solomon's Temple is built or...
if somebody has placed all of their...
like warehouses or supply houses or whatever they are. And so, as we're going along, we're like, oh, well, everybody's built a couple supply houses. Basically, nobody has built Solomon's Temple. Whatever. And then people started realizing how many victory points you got for building Solomon's Temple, and then guess how the game ended.
That was the thing that super irritated me, because that was one of those things I was like, oh, this doesn't require a major investment anywhere else to do. I'll just keep going over to Solomon's Temple. I pulled all of the lowest value tokens.
Well,
and I gave enough other people the idea to go over and work on doing that. So I have all these like sixes and a nine, and other people are pulling like 9, 9, 8, 10. I'm like, what? What?
Well, and the other thing was that once you start assigning work, so that you can assign up to 6 workers to Solomon's Temple across all the players.
Across all the players.
But every successive worker costs more to put them there.
Yeah.
And so once other people started catching on to the value of that strategy, now it became more expensive to get there and stuff like that. So there's a lot going on in this game, Wisdom of Solomon. We have to play it more before we're going to be able to review this game. There is no way that this game can be reviewed with one play. There's a lot of stuff in it that affords replayability.
Yes.
The different buildings and stuff like that, which I appreciate very much. I think the network mechanic is really interesting.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about what that is, but you'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, well, there will be a review for this game. It's a really interesting mechanic. Yeah, I had fun with that game. I did not know what to expect, but I would absolutely play that game again.
That same night, we did an unlock box.
We did. We did the formula.
Yeah, that one was neat.
It was. We just like had a bad night, I think, doing this because we missed cards a couple times.
I felt like overall, we didn't do the best job we could have. But I think we finally stumbled into the place where we're like, you know what? I have no idea what's going on here. Let's just take a hint. Like, hints don't kill you.
Right.
Let's just go.
Right.
And have fun with it, rather than just sitting there racking our brains like we used to do with some of the exit and unlock.
Yeah, I mean, the exit boxes are better than the unlock. Like, it was such a strong contrast between the last exit box we did where we just destroyed it. And this unlock where we just struggled.
We missed one hidden number, and
it was just weird though. And then we did that. We found that other. We solved that other puzzle without doing it the right way. Like it was just weird.
Yeah, it was strange.
It was weird. So, I think we're still leaning exit over unlock, but we do enjoy those games very much.
Yeah,
they're a lot of fun. I like the unlock ones because they're reusable, so we could borrow someone's and give it back to them. Like that was cool. But yeah.
Yeah. What else have I got? I've been playing some Rolling America with my little homemade dice tray in the car.
Yep.
I am looking forward to the time that I spend less time in the car in a couple of months.
Yep.
But I also got our son Asher to play Imhotep with me. Now that he knows the basics of how to play, it was less of a hard sell.
Sure.
And he sat down on a Saturday morning and just straight up played a two-player game with me and beat me.
Did he really?
Yeah,
like
he really
straight
did.
Up just
straight
beat
up
you?
Beat me.
That's awesome.
There were one or two times when I kind of gave him, you know, a little tip like maybe you want to do it this way instead of this way, you know, or watch out if I get this boat, I can bring it wherever I want. So maybe you want to head me off there. But that was kind of the extent of the help I gave him. The strategy was all his, and in the end he beat me, I think it was 59 to 53. Mm-hmm. So he did a great job.
Awesome. That's good. We'll have to do a three-player game. Imhotep's on my 10x10, so I got to get moving.
You got to get moving on playing
yeah,
that
yeah.
then.
Yeah, so that'll
I've
be
played
good
it three stuff. Times this year. Woo!
That's awesome.
Oh, and in another success story, I played King Domino with Elliot, our four-year-old.
Hooray! That was earlier today,
That
I
was
think?
Earlier today.
Yeah.
And he also beat me. In his case, it's because there were a couple times I was like, maybe you don't want to put the domino that way. Maybe you want to flip it around.
Okay, mommy. So, the only obedience we ever get out of him.
I know, right? But he was making much better choices overall than I was. And it wasn't like I wasn't trying. I just wasn't paying enough attention, I think. So...
maybe. I mean, at this point, like, the kid's been so inculcated into board games that, you know, he's got to be able to figure it out eventually.
Some of it, yeah. Well, I think that's it. That's plenty. I mean, there's a few other small things. We pulled up Bananagrams again. That starts working really well once kids are fluent readers. Asher still has a tough time with it, but Claire is flying along. I beat her by the skin of my teeth. I still like that. Bananagrams is, to me, everything that I feel like Scrabble should be. It's all about just fitting words together well.
Right.
And not caring about points.
Right. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that's going to be it for what we've been playing, huh?
Yeah.
Feels like a light couple of weeks, I think.
We've been busy with other things.
That's too bad. Well, we'll play more stuff. So, yeah. So we're going to take a break now. And when we come back, we're going to talk about building stuff.
We built this city.
We can't afford that one.
I'll come up with one.
All right, we'll be right back.
Hi-ya!
I challenge you to a duel.
Only if it's tiny. This snap review is for tiny ninjas.
Tiny Ninjas is a game of cards and dice by Ryan Leininger, published by Tooniverse Games.
It's for two players, ages 8+, and it's 15 minutes, just about.
So how do we play Tiny Ninjas? Let's start with the setup.
You open the box and take out the rules. Then you see these two cardboard pieces, and you're like, what do I do with these? And you take them, and you slit them in the sides of the box, so they're connecting the lid to the box.
These cardboard side pieces form a sort of dice tray out of the attached hinged lid. And they also have slits in them to provide places for your health dial and your sensei ability marker. Once you've taken everything else out, then there's room in the main body of the box for two stacks of cards. What are the two stacks called?
The dojo and the arena.
So the dojo is your draw pile and the arena is your discard.
Each player starts with 10 health and a hand of 5 cards. The youngest player decides who will start as attacker and defender.
All right. The attacking player plays one card from their hand and performs the associated ability. Or, if it's a straight-up attack, often the damage of the attack is determined by a die roll. Then, the defending player may choose to play one card from their hand to defend against some or all of the damage. Sometimes this also requires a die roll. The attacking player can keep attacking and take as many attack turns as they want. When they decide to stop, the defender and the attacker switch roles.
And the person that was the defender draws back up to 5 cards, but the attacker does not draw back up.
The attacker has to become the defender with only the cards they have remaining. So it's an important piece of strategy to decide how many of your cards you want to play for attacking. That's the basics of the game. Simply attack, defend, attack, defend. Whoever runs out of health first loses.
Yeah.
What makes this game unusual is the die rolls required. There are two dice in the box. The kunai die, which is red.
And the shuriken die, which is grayish.
Between these two dice, there are many different combinations, and each card can require a different kind of probability. The kunai die has a 50-50 split on color. 3 of the faces are black and 3 of the faces are white. But it has an unequal distribution of number. There are 3 ones, 2 twos, and 1 three. The shuriken die is numbered 1 through 6, evenly spaced, but it's got 3 different colors on it. So 2 faces are teal, 2 faces are orange, and 2 faces are purple. So having these 2 very different looking dice allows for all different kinds of probabilities for different attacks or defense or powers in a very intuitive way. We haven't even mentioned the solo mode yet. Asher, how do you play the solo mode?
There's advanced cards. You add those in, and there's 6 cards you take out.
Okay. How do you play?
You always start as the attacker.
Mm-hmm.
You have the dojo, and you have your 5 cards. You play 1 card and do what it says to attack. And then the CPU is just the deck, and you flip a card from the deck and defend how it says.
Mm-hmm.
When you decide you're done being the attacker, the CPU for being attacker, you just flip a card, do what it says, and do that attack. The CPU attacks 3 times. You should use its sensei to track how many times it attacks. Ayun suggests it in the rules.
All right. We forgot to mention, with the attacks and defense, on top of having the die rolls, attacks come in 2 different colors, red and blue. And how does defending work in the standard rules?
Defending comes in 3 colors, red, blue, and yellow. Red only defends red damage, blue defends blue damage, and yellow can defend either one.
Okay, so that's another piece that you work into your strategy as you play the game. I've got a little example here. Panda attacks. So his card says either 1 or 2 red damage. You roll the red die, the kunai die, and if a white side comes up, your attack does 1 red damage. If a black side comes up, your attack does 2 damage. In this case, the attacker with panda rolled white, so it's 1 red damage, and then our defender played the solo card, which always defends 1 red. In this case, no damage happens, just everybody discards their cards, and you move on. In the game, there are 4 different sensei tokens. At the beginning, you can choose which color sensei you would like to be, green, blue, pink, or red. If you choose to use senseis in your game, then you also get a special power with a different power assigned to each sensei. One gives you an extra way to block damage, One lets you heal a little bit. Each sensei's abilities can only be used 3 times in the game and only once in a round. So Asher, we know this is currently your favorite game. Can you tell us why?
Because sometimes when I want to play a game, nobody wants to play a game with me. So I just pull this out and play it, because the other solo games we have, most of them I don't know how to play, and some of them I can't reach.
Fair enough. We also like this as a solo game or a two-player game for car trips and plane trips, anything where you need something easy to transport, because it's relatively small and it plays right in the box, which is fantastic, especially for playing in the car. Personally, I also love the artwork. The box is gorgeous. That tray that folds out looks like a beautiful landscape. Slightly cartoony, but gorgeous. And the ninjas, as you get up to the higher powers, are increasingly unlikely looking. Some of my personal favorites are Baby Ninja, whose special ability is Tantrum, and Robot Ninja, whose special ability is called Program, which might attack or might heal, depending on a die roll.
It's PRGR4M.
Yes, Program in Elite speak. Overall, Tiny Ninjas is a solid head-to-head dueling game, and the design of the box with everything self-contained and the really creative use of the dice bumps it further up in our estimation.
We give Tiny Ninjas 4 out of 5 ninja stars.
And that's Tiny Ninjas in a snap. And we're back.
We are going to talk about building games, and I got to say this, a lot of liberty can be taken with the term building games, and so ideally, really, what we're looking at is the construction kind of building, even in the macro sense.
Sort of,
in the macro sense. And so, you know, there. I mean, one could say that a game like Ancestry, for example, is a family tree building game.
Sure, you have a structure at the end of the game.
Right, and almost any tile laying game is in some way a building game, right? But,
sure.
But what we're really going to be trying to find here is something where it's a little more, the building is a little more on the nose, right?
Yeah, well, we asked the question on our Facebook group, and our fan Peter Ellis said, well, what kind of building?
Right.
Engine building? Deck building?
Right.
Replacement with buildings?
And so all those things, like, and I thought about this because I was like, oh, is Dominion a building game because it's a deck builder? No. I'm not thinking of the building mechanic like that, like an engine builder or a deck builder or something like that. Remember, this whole thing was inspired by Tiny Towns, which is a game where you are building towns.
In a very loose sense, what we're talking about this time is games that when you're done with the game, you have something you've built.
Yeah, there's some concept of construction to the game.
Yeah.
Right. And, I mean, look, we're just a couple of people doing a podcast on the internet. Like, we can have fun with this.
Yes.
And so no shame if you prefer those other kinds of games. And maybe we'll do a show all about deck building and then a show all about engine building. And you guys can tell us all your favorite ones of those things that don't necessarily correlate to building a physical engine. Although the engine builder would be amazing.
Like
deck builder, tearing, the deck builder, right.
Like tearing down a V8 engine?
Yeah.
Engine builder, the engine builder?
Yeah, sure, something like that. That'd be, whatever, I don't know.
You heard it here first, folks. Somebody steal this idea and run with it on Kickstarter.
Please, that would be great. I'll settle for an advisory credit. But anyway, so let's talk about some building games. And we had a lot of fun talking about some games that are in our collection that we've played that we have a lot of fun with. We got some great comments on social media about some games that people thought qualified, and I'm sure we're going to talk about those a little bit later, but why don't we start with some of our ideas and talk about some games that we consider as building games.
Well, obviously Tiny Towns.
Yes. Yeah. And spoiler alert, there is a legitimate possibility that this is going to become our favorite building game. It's not yet.
It's not yet.
At the end of this, we're going to talk about our favorite building game, but it may get there.
Yeah. Well, I immediately started thinking about games where you're physically building buildings.
Sure.
So the best treehouse ever.
Mm-hmm. From Green Couch.
From Green Couch Games.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Tournament of Towers, in which you are physically building a tower.
Yeah, that one is a dexterity game where you are physically building a tower. Unlike Best Treehouse Ever, you're trying to build this like balanced, awesome treehouse.
Although they both have card drafting. Hmm.
That's true.
Here's one that doesn't. Tokyo Jutaku.
Oh, my gosh. We talked about this game a little while ago. This is a game that's a little bit like Number 9 in its three-dimensional building mechanics.
Yeah, you're building up layers of building and you can't overlap the lower floors and stuff, but oh my goodness.
You can't overlap the lower floors. You can't overlap holes.
You can't overlap
lower
holes
levels.
In the lower
right,
floors.
Right. And you're given a card that says you need to use X number of pieces to create Y number of floors.
That fits within this outline.
That fits within this outline. And it's way harder than it sounds.
Ah, because the pieces are not, they look like they're regular shapes, but they're really not.
So here's my question about Tokyo Jutaku. Do you think that every box has the same pieces in the same shapes?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I mean, because they're random enough that that might not be the case.
Hey, let's fill a box with random offcuts and polish them up a little bit.
I mean, you know, why not? It's a way to make a game on the cheap. But anyway, all right. Let's see. So you mentioned a couple of games that were on your list. I have a couple of kind of stretch games that are...
Little off the beaten path.
Yeah. Okay. So Ticket to Ride, you're building a train network.
All right, sure.
Tesla versus Edison, you're building an electrical network.
Maybe.
No, you're not loving.
I'm not
these
loving
so far.
That one.
How about Power Grid? You're building an electrical network.
Okay, that one's a lot more obviously building an electrical grid. Sure. Okay.
Let's see. What about Imhotep?
I thought about that one. Building is really not the focus of
and
that
yet
game,
the
and
name
yet
of
is.
The game is Imhotep, Builder of Egypt.
Yeah.
And therefore, I put it on the list. It's in the name.
It's a borderline case, sure.
If it's in the name, it's in the name.
Well, now you're going to have to make me pick a different one for my favorite, because I considered Imhotep and discarded it.
All right. Well, you can say when you choose your favorite that you did not consider it a building game, and therefore it is not your favorite building game, and yet it is a game you like.
It is one of my favorite games.
That is mom prerogative.
Well, how about some more straight up like city building ones like Super Tall from Buttonshy and Sprawlopolis and Circle the Wagons, also published by Buttonshy. In all of these, you're building Super Tall, you're building towers. Circle the Wagons and Sprawlopolis, you're building like a city or a village or a boomtown.
Right. Mm-hmm. Those are good examples. How about a game like Kintsugi, where you're kind of building the patching on the pottery?
Maybe. That kind of fits in your tile-laying game idea.
Okay, sure.
So, sure.
All right.
How about the Grim Forest?
The Grim Forest is it's a very abstracted building. I mean, the point of the game is to build
the
three houses. So, yes, I suppose I would qualify that as a building game.
It's funny, like, that's the goal of the game, but that's definitely not the focus of the game.
Right. Well, you could say, like... Castle Panic, you have to build the walls back up. Like, that's a stretch, but...
Nah,
you know.
That's more repair.
Right. Okay, fine. Fair. Another one that's a stretch for me on this list is Through the Ages. It is an empire-building game.
Boo.
No? You're not liking that? Okay. All right.
You had mentioned to me earlier, though, how about Catan?
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely is. You're settling the island of Catan.
Yeah.
So, sure.
Well, how about some suggestions from our listeners?
Okay, sure.
So Peter Ellis, who asked what kind, gave us one for each category.
So we'll skip
We'll skip the engine building and the deck building, but work replacement with buildings above and below.
Okay, you're kind of building your town.
You're building your town.
Okay, sure.
We could say the same thing for Megaland or Near and Far.
Megaland, the same game. Megaland would be tableau building, which is like Monte Carlo.
Sure.
Yep.
And he also mentions for city building, Sprawlopolis.
Right.
Because who wouldn't, really?
It's a good game.
Our listener Krista Cox suggested Minara and Catch the Moon, which look like, I don't know a whole lot about these games, but these are both games with a heavy dexterity component.
So Catch the Moon is really cool. Catch the Moon is this game where you're leaning ladders up against each other and trying to get as tall as you can, and I think the person who knocks the thing over busts or something
like
that.
There's some sort of competitive aspect to
Catch the Moon. But it's really cool looking.
Minara is a cooperative building game where you're laying out these pieces and then little, like, wooden dowels on them to build up to the next level.
Uh-huh.
And from the little I looked at the rules, every time somebody makes a mistake, you have to add another level on.
Okay.
So it gets higher and higher. So think a little bit like Rhino Hero Super Battle.
Okay.
Sort of branching out and then coming up in different spots.
Sure. Well, actually, in looking at the picture of Minara that's on BGG, that was making me think of Rhino Hero and whether or not that would be considered a building game. Probably not. I mean, it's really just a dexterity game that happens to be...
You're building a building.
I know, I guess.
Yeah?
I guess. Man, we're really stretching this building thing a lot, aren't we?
Is that a problem?
No. I'm just kind of chuckling to myself about it. I will say that Kyle Laserdog on Twitter said, and this I thought was brilliant, Galaxy Trucker.
I never would have thought of that, but it's totally a building game.
It's a spaceship building game.
You're building a spaceship,
yes.
And at the end of the game, you have a spaceship.
It's fantastic.
Spaceship!
So I love that idea. Galaxy Trucker absolutely is a building game. And we were joking earlier about Space Team, which is a game, which is really this goofy, crazy, zany cooperative game, but technically you're building / repairing your spaceship.
Yeah, I'm not sure we would count that one, but...
All systems are go!
It's a fun game.
It is a fun game. That is an excellent... You know what Space Team is good for is if you have like a small group of people that basically nobody knows each other.
It's an excellent icebreaker.
It's a fantastic icebreaker. I love that game.
Yes.
All right.
I don't think we've mentioned yet Baron Park.
Mm-hmm. Baron Park is a Bear Park building
game. You are building the Bear Park.
I like it. That's a good option. And there's a lot of other like city building games. You think of games like Suburbia.
Okay.
Quadropolis, Flip City.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
City Square Off. Would you consider that a building game?
Oh, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long time since I've played that
one. And then there's games like Castellan, which is more of an area control game, kind of like Carcassonne.
But you're
more of an area
building
control,
out
you're,
the board as
exactly,
you go.
You're building out what you do as you go
same
along
thing
in the game.
Same thing with Carcassonne,
sure. Yeah, same idea with those kinds of things. So that's just a couple more alternate options for us.
Well, we've talked a lot about what makes and doesn't make a building game in our humble opinions.
In this wildly changing and rapidly...
evolving list.
Evolving list, yeah. And rapidly evolving list. Yep, we sure have.
So, by our very loose and strange definition, what is your favorite building game?
Well, we already mentioned it on our list here. I think
that's not Tiny Towns.
It's not Tiny Towns. I think that I have to go with something that's more of one of the more conventional building games. It is something that I really love. Almost everything about, there's one tiny thing that I don't like about this game, but we took care of that. And that's the insert. And so now you know that the game that I'm picking is Baron Park.
All right. I think that's a good choice. I'm actually torn between two for my favorite.
Okay.
Because I do love Sprawlopolis, even though I'm terrible at it. But I also really love Castellan, and I wish it got more play in our house.
Sure.
And I didn't really consider Imhotep as a building game, or then it might have been a three-way tie.
Okay. All right. That's fair. So Baron Park and Castellan are the building games of choice.
And Sprawlopolis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we know that there's all sorts of building games that are out there in reality, and a bunch of them that we haven't mentioned. Feel free to let us know what your favorite building game is. And if you want to yell at us with shovels and pitchforks and demand that we include your dice building game because Dice Forge is a building game because you're building dice and that's your favorite game, that's fine. Come at me, because then we'll have back talk. And there's lots of different ways that you can get a hold of us. The easiest way to do that is to head right over to our social media feed. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Family Gamers. AA.
Or talk to us in the Family Gamers Facebook community. The easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community or search for Family Gamers Community on Facebook. You can, of course, email us.
Mm-hmm. You can email me, Andrew, at thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra, at thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, or leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify and Stitcher, etc., etc.
Please tell your friends. We all have a friend who is wondering, what are some good podcasts I could listen to? Hopefully ours makes the cut.
Hopefully. And hey, it's family friendly, so you can throw it on with the kids in the car.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you guys want me to tell dad jokes on the show, I can tell dad jokes on the show.
Don't steal Steven Dutzman's thunder, though.
Oh, is that
a thing? He's all about the dad jokes on the show.
That's fine. Whatever. I can tell dad joke anyway.
Dad jokes are all inclusive. And sometimes they're mom jokes.
Sure. There is another way that you can help us out. You can check out our pod pledge. You can go to thefamilygamers.com/podpledge, see what we're all about. We have super low like funding goals and stuff, and we'll send you buttons, and we'll send you like birthday cards and Christmas cards and stuff. We want you to be
birthday present
part of the family.
The Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by Breaking Games. Fill the sky with stars and catch them as they shoot in The Stars Align from Breaking Games. Players take turns spotting their color of stars in the sky by playing constellation cards to the map. Once the sky is full of stars, they start to twinkle, or flip to the reverse color. When the same color stars create a line across the night sky, they shoot and disappear. The first stargazer to catch 5 shooting stars is the winner. Find out who's the best stargazer in your family by picking up the game from BreakingGames.com.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week. So everybody, until next week,
play games with your kids.